Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. This is a busy time for the St. Louis public school system. A campaign is underway to increase the city's property tax by 75 cents to fund system improvements. The campaign is called Critical by supporters. The system seems to be on track for eventual state accreditation. Meantime, the Special Administrative Board mandate for overseeing the system has been extended for 3 more years. These are just some of the things confronting Superintendent Dr. Kelvin Adams. He has been on the job since 2008, and he joins us in studio, as does Dale Singer, St. Louis Public Radio education reporter. Dr. Adams, thanks so much for being with us.
Good evening, Don. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr.
Dale,
Singer.
Thank you for being with us as well. Dr. Adams, I guess the principal issue before you right now is Proposition 1, the tax increase proposal. You've got a little over a month to get that thing all squared away.
Yes, sir. Yeah. We kicked off the campaign on Monday at the district office with the intent of providing the public with information relative to why we think this is important. Obviously, there are always needs in a public entity like the public school district. We have not asked the voters to support anything relative to a tax levy for 25 years. Early child education, alternative education, and competitive wages for employees are the three things that we think are critical to continue the district moving in the right direction. Some of the dollars that were desegregation dollars that were supporting the district over the last 3 or 4 years will be going away the next 2 years. And so we see an opportunity. You know, this is really an intersection of a need versus an opportunity. Opportunity in the sense that the district is moving in the right direction academically and managing its resources very well, and we thought this would be a good time to ask the voters to support the district in light of the needs that we have and in light of the progress that has taken place over the last 7 years.
$28 million, I believe, is the figure that you're looking at?
Approximately $26 million, with approximately $8 to $9 million of those dollars moving and going to charter schools. The district will really manage, after 2 years, approximately $18 million, with charter schools receiving approximately $8 to $9 million.
Why are charter schools being treated a little bit differently in the distribution of funds?
The manner in which the state calculates funding, they really are looking at the tax dollars 2 years back. So they build their budget in arrears, if you will, by looking at tax levy from 2 years. So we will receive the dollars this year, but the state won't actually look at those dollars as tax dollars for the city of St. Louis until 2 years from now. And so that's how they do it. And we have no control over that. If they would change it, we wouldn't have an issue with it, but it will be up to them to do that.
I see. Yeah.
I know it's one thing for you to build your case for the tax increase, but you've got competition on the ballot in April. How are you going to try to differentiate yourselves from those other issues like the earnings tax?
We think we have a targeted campaign, looking at a targeted group of voters that we have asked to support the district in the past. And so we have a really, you know, strategic campaign. We're not spending a lot of money to do this. Obviously, there's some persons who are spending a lot of money to get the vote out that that taxes are not appropriate. But we think we have the ear of the voters in terms of the progress that has been made and the real case around early child education. The idea that every child in the city of St. Louis would have an opportunity to go to school early, meaning at ages 3 and 4, with the idea of them receiving a firm foundation for their life, quite frankly, we think is a compelling case. And so we are confident that the right message will get out and the voters will support it.
Voices that have been heard in criticism are concerned that some of this money will be used for administrative costs and that it won't go where perhaps it should go.
The district has proven over the last 7 years, especially, that they have been good stewards of dollars that the public has entrusted us with. We started with about a $65 million deficit and presently have a $20 million surplus. And so that did not occur by being not being responsible with the dollars that we received, but I can indicate publicly and privately that there's no intent for these dollars to go toward any hires around administrators. As a matter of fact, when I sat before the elected board, I think it was about a week ago, that issue came up, and I assured them that the dollars will not be used for administrative salaries, at least not for new administrative salaries.
Is this enough time to educate the public on what you want to do? I mean, it's like a 5-week campaign. Most of the campaigns we're used to are much longer than that.
Well, again, I think we've been targeted around it. The person who's managed the campaign, I think I made an error in saying that this person has not been successful in 25 campaigns. They've been unsuccessful only in one. It's really four, not one. The person has a knowledge base around how to do this and has been doing for the last 25 years with the district and has a success rate that I would like to have in everything I do, quite frankly. And so I think we feel confident that it's the right strategy that we're using. I don't know that we would want to come out, quite frankly, any earlier than the time we have come out. We don't have a lot of dollars, so we don't have a lot of money to spend for campaigns like the presidential campaign might be millions and millions of dollars. We're spending a limited amount of dollars that have been provided to us. And so we feel confident that we are moving in the right direction in terms of getting the vote, the message out to the right people.
While we're on this subject, I have an email here from Carol, who writes, as a public school parent for over 13 years, I'd like to support Proposition 1, but can't get over the feeling that the SAB, the Special Administrative Board, is not planning on leaving. They have overstayed their welcome. For this reason, I feel like SAB may be hiding the real object of the proposal.
Well, I think, the state had confidence to continue the SAB for 3 years. These dollars will be here whether the SAB is here or not. If elected board comes back in the next 2-3 years, and it's my understanding, what the state said this time is that while there's a 3-year window, they do have the flexibility to change that at any point in time within that 3-year period of time, and those dollars are going to be provided to the students in the district, not to the SAB. The SAB doesn't receive any dollars. They've had approximately 180 meetings that they've attended at no cost, at no cost to the taxpayers because they don't get paid. And so I understand that level of concern, but I think we have to really keep the focus on students as opposed to the adults in this issue.
Did you say 180 meetings?
180 meetings, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Another issue that's been raised along those lines is whether or not people like the SAB who are appointed are going to be as effective and as responsive to the citizens as an elected board would be. What do you have to say to that?
I had this conversation with somebody on yesterday. I think because the SAB is not a board that has been voted by the public, we work incredibly hard to be as transparent, maybe even more transparent than an elected board might be, because I think that notion is out there. We had a gifted parent meeting over the last 4 weeks, and we had parents coming, and in a transparent way, we provided them all of the information because the SAB holds us accountable for making sure that the public is aware of what's going on. So I think we take an extra step to try to do that. I understand the notion of why the SAB is in place and voters not having the ability to exercise the democratic right. But this is the hand that we have been dealt, and the progress over the last 7 years speaks to not necessarily SAB, but a collective people working together to get the best results for kids, irrespective of how people feel about the quote-unquote governance structure. There's not a kid in the city of St. Louis that I've spoken to who is concerned about the governance structure. They're concerned about what kind of support teachers provide to them.
Is it at all cumbersome for you dealing with the SAB and the elected school board?
No, it's not. Obviously, it's different than any superintendent that I know of anyway. But I would think that I have a good relationship with the SAB, and I think I have a good relationship with the elected board. I meet with them whenever they ask me to meet, and I try to provide them as much information as possible and just try to be transparent about what we're doing. So for me, it's different, but not necessarily something that I think is onerous in any way, shape, or form.
The SAB, as I understand it, is to come up with a transition plan.
Yes.
April, is that correct?
That is correct.
What is that transition? What is that all about?
I'm not sure. I know we're meeting with the state commissioner either this week or next week to kind of start that conversation. And we'll find out at that point in time, but we are meeting with the state commissioner in the next 5-6 days to start the process of looking at what that is. The SAB, as I'm obviously sitting there as a as a non-voting member of the SAB, and I'll sit in and listen, but the SAB is meeting with the state commissioner in the next week to talk about that.
But the word transition, this is to transition back to the elected board at some point? Is that what that's all about?
It's my understanding, yes. Yes, that's correct. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, I thought you had a question there, Dale. Let's take a call, and as it happens, I recognize the name, and you will too. It's Bill Haas calling, and he's a member of the elected board, and I'm not surprised that he's listening. Bill, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank you. I listen to the show every day, of course.
There you go.
Every time I call the show, I whine about the same thing, that it's about third grade reading scores to improve the district that starts in pre-K. And so I just am thrilled at this opportunity to say that this tax, if it passes, will improve the lives of children in the early grades by helping them with their reading and other subjects. That's good for the district. That's good for the city. That's good for the businesses. And I know that real estate taxes are a burden on some, so I won't tell people how to use their money. But the governance issues aside about the SAB and the elected board, Dr. we agree on one thing, if I may say, that Dr. Adams is the best superintendent in history of the St. Louis schools. He's probably the best in the country, and that there is no doubt that this money will be spent as it's supposed to be, on early childhood education and vocational and college readiness for the older children to keep them engaged in the schools and prepared for a life ahead instead of dropping out in alternatives. And I would just encourage everybody to do their best to vote for this because it's good for everybody and it's going to help the kids and the money's going to be spent as Dr. Adams says it's going to be spent.
Bill, thank you so much for the call. I'm sure Dr. Adams is appreciative.
I'll say amen. Amen.
Okay. That's Bill Haas, a member of the elected board. He called you the best superintendent in the history of the system, but we almost lost you. We almost lost you to L.A.
I did have conversations with the person in persons in Los Angeles relative to the superintendent's position, but I met with the SAB prior to them reaching out to me and told them, you know, clearly, you know, I would talk to. I've always advised people to talk to people about jobs. If somebody comes and knocks on my door today, tomorrow, I will talk to them. It doesn't mean I'm going to leave. But I tell young people it's always to your benefit to have a conversation, and that's what I basically did. That conversation became a little bit more serious for them than it probably was for me, and obviously the story got out that I was looking to go to Los Angeles, but it was never my intent to move to go to Los Angeles.
Oh, Dale, we have to take a break. We'll pick up on this point because a couple of questions have been raised here. We're talking with St. Louis School Superintendent Dr. Kelvin Adams. With me in studio is Dale Singer, St. Louis Public Radio Education Reporter. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Dr. Adams in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And I'm Don Marsh, back with you on St. Louis on the Air with St. Louis Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Kelvin Adams and St. Louis Public Radio Education Reporter Dale Singer. And Dale, you wanted to pick up on our discussion about the overtures Los Angeles made to Dr. Adams.
Yeah, I know that when that was going on, I put a little poll on Twitter, who should go to L.A. and who should stay here, you or the Rams. And people wanted you to stay here much more than they wanted the Rams to stay here. So that was... that will be good, but are negotiations underway for you to renew your contract at this point?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Yes, my contract ends on June 30, 2016, and the board has made an offer, and we're talking about it right now.
Is that going to wait until after the election? Or?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Do you think it's at all disruptive to the system to have the publicity about the potential for your leaving out there?
I don't know. I think it's... I would rather that it did not become public, that there were conversations that were taking place, or conversations that L.A. had made overtures. But I don't know that I can control it. Normally these kinds of things are supposed to be, quote-unquote, kept under wraps or secretive, but obviously you have education reporters across the country who make it their business to dig and find these kinds of things out. And but, you know, my board knew exactly what was going on. It wasn't anything that... I was pursuing. They reached out to me. And, you know, to be told, that happens on a regular basis. This one just became public.
You're a pretty private guy, I would say.
I guess so.
What do you think, what about you do you think people ought to know that they don't know?
I guess what they will, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty kind of boring, to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know that there's any real secrets. You know, I work really hard to try to make sure that we are doing the best we can for young people in this community, and that's really what my focus is. It has been for the last 8 years. On a personal side, I like biking, and I like watching sports. Outside of that, I think I'm like most men in America, I mean, in that way. So I don't know that there's anything that anybody could uncover in a kind of quote-unquote secretive kind of way. As I said, I'm pretty boring.
Not secretive, but surprised. What would surprise people if they knew that about you? I found out that you have kind of a sweet tooth. That kind of surprised me.
Yeah, that's true. Sweet tooth. I like to draw. I like to listen to jazz. I think those are the, that's it. I don't think, I don't know if there's anything outside of that. I mean, I'm pretty boring. I really am. I have two great kids, one in Los Angeles and one in New Orleans. And, we talk probably two or three times a week. And so, like most fathers, I'm really proud of them.
What do they do?
One is a budding actor, one a wannabe actor, if you will, and one is a teacher.
A teacher. Well, mm-hmm. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right?
Sometimes she wishes it did, but yes, it doesn't fall far from the tree.
Is she a teacher because of you or in spite of you?
I think it's because. I think, we have a really great relationship, and she's proud of her father, and I'm proud of my daughter. And so she really, wants to help impact young people's lives, and so that's what she does.
Looking back over the 8 years that you've been here, what kind of stands out to you? I mean, obviously there have been some changes, there's been some drama, and there's been some crisis, and even chaos, I suppose, is not an improper word to use. What stands out?
I was at a TFA function this weekend as they were bringing some candidates into St. Louis to try to encourage them to look at St. Louis as an option for school leadership, persons who were connected to St. Louis, and they asked the same question, and this is what I said to them. I am proudest most of the fact that this community has been a real partner with the district in terms of supporting public education. And when I say public, I also mean charters as well. And so I think the notion that the community thinks differently around public education in this community. Now, everybody doesn't think differently around it, but I think enough people believe more about what the district is doing than ever before. And that's important to me. It's important that the community knows that we really care about kids and they are our priorities. There's a African proverb that says when elephants fight, grass gets trampled. And so we want to make sure that elephants are not fighting, adults are not fighting, and young people are being impacted by the fight. So we try to make sure we work really hard to get everybody in this community focused around young people.
Talk about your relationship with the charter schools. I know there are a lot of diehard public school people who think charter schools are almost like the enemy, and I know that your relationship with them has morphed over the years. Talk about the importance and where they fit in.
So there are 41,000 kids who receive public dollars from the state and from local taxes to support kids in the city of St. Louis. Some 5,000 kids who go to the VIC, participate in the VIC program every day, and about 10,500 kids in charters. And so I'm concerned about what happens to kids in the city of St. Louis, irrespective of what environment they're in that they're being educated in. My relationship with charters is focused around that, making sure that we are partners, because kids leave charters and come to the district schools. They leave the district schools and go to charters. They leave VIC and come to the city for charters or for public schools, or traditional public schools. And so my attempt, if you will, is to create a line of communication such that information can flow easily and that those kids won't get caught again, elephants fight, grass gets trampled, in terms of what happens around their education. So I've been open to listen, to talk to support, if you will, what's best for kids in the city of St. Louis, irrespective of the environment that they're being educated in.
Could any kind of a case be made for consolidating all the school districts in this area into one?
I've heard that several times. I think the real challenge is the answer to your question, I think, yes. I think the hard part is how do you deal with the funding and administrative pieces that go along with that. So it's easy to say do it, because I think we could leverage a lot of contracts and those kinds of things, leverage resources. But the challenge would be who does what. It's part of your questions today were questions around the elected board and appointed board. Could you imagine 10 boards? Could you imagine that many people having a say about what happens in a certain area and how it's done? I think that would be the real challenge. The challenge is not necessarily educating kids. I think the challenge is how do you govern that kind of piece.
Sure. Let's go back to the phones and get some of the listeners into the conversation. We'll start with Nana, who is calling from St. Louis. Nana, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. My question is, why is it that the property taxes in the city of St. Louis, specifically the Skinker DeBeliver area, is so high? And also for business owners like myself, the earning tax is so high that we are having to pay. And then we're having to pay this additional taxes that the city is asking us to pay for the public school. When does it stop? Why isn't the property tax enough to support St. Louis Public School?
Well, I can speak to the, I guess, the boat issues just a little bit. Right now, the city of St. Louis taxpayers pay the lowest tax right now for public education. Even after this 75-cent increase, it will still be the lowest of the 25 districts that support us. So we have not asked the voters to support anything in the area of public education as it relates to a tax in the last 25 years. So for 25 years, nothing has occurred to support public education. There are a lot of tax abatements that occur, and persons who build buildings get sometimes 5, 10, 20, 25-year abatements, which means that they're not required to pay any taxes, and all of those things have an impact on what happens to the classroom. And so if someone could tell me that the quality of your educational program in the city of St. Louis could still be at a high level and you're not paying taxes in 25 years, I think people would kind of shake their head and say, wow, that's almost impossible. So I think Bill Haas said it earlier, and I'll use his words, the city gets better as it relates to having a better educational program, a better educational system. And so I think you kind of pay what you get for. I mean, you get what you pay for in terms of what has to be done. I live in the city as well. My taxes are going to go up. I welcome paying the tax because I know it's going to make a difference long term for what happens to young people's lives, and more importantly, those young people coming back and impacting the city in a positive way. So while I understand the concern relative to the tax, I think it is a tax that will not be a regressive tax. It will benefit what happens to the city of St. Louis.
It's terrifically important. A robust and successful school system, public school system, is tremendously important for our community.
It's incredibly important. I don't think people really understand just how important it really is because many kids, many of the families don't have children in public education, and they think because they don't have children in public education, they don't need to pay for it. But they pay for it in crime. They pay for it in remediation programs. They pay for it in a number of different things. And so if the early childhood program allows kids to go in and get the kind of foundation that they need, then those students are going to be contributing adults in this community and quite frankly want to stay in the community and contribute more in terms of paying sales tax and other taxes as well. So I don't think you can walk away from not supporting public education in any community.
Another tax question from David calling from St. Louis. David, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Dr. Adams.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. First of all, let me say that one of the things that I do like about Dr. Adams that has impressed not only myself but others in the St. Louis community is his commitment to education and his seriousness of ensuring that our kids receive a quality education. This guy has shown that he reads the data and he reacts to that data. And he's been very, very successful, and we're very fortunate that he is still here in St. Louis, and I hope he continue that progress. My question relating to this tax levy is, I'm a taxpayer, and I am in support of the increase, but I'd like to know that there's comments about in the papers about the charter schools will share in this tax increase. And based upon how many charter schools have closed over the past 3 years, would that money come back to the St. Louis Public Schools, or do we just lose that? Do the charter schools close and leave town and take our money with them, or can we recoup that money that we sent with the child?
Great. We have your point. Thank you.
If a charter school closes during the course of the school year, the state will readjust the amount of money that goes to that would go to a charter school and redirect that money to the appropriate place. If they go to another charter school or they come to a public school, they would. But in terms of past schools that have closed, no, those dollars are gone because the dollars are for a fiscal year. And once that fiscal year ends on June 30th, 2000, or whatever the year it is, those dollars go away and new dollars come available. So, no. Some adjustments are made by the State Education Department, but for the most part, those dollars go away.
Okay. We're coming up close to another break here. We did a program the other day on stress in school kids.
Yes.
And we don't have much time before the break to talk this, but is this an issue
yes.
In our system?
Yes. It's a major issue. As a matter of fact, I'm meeting with my person responsible for social workers and nurses today at 3 o'clock to talk about a trauma-informed curriculum in terms of looking at how do we teach kids and staff to identify trauma and to successfully address it and deal with, i.e. stress. And so, yes, it is a major, 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 major concern. One school district, Jennings School District, is doing it right now, and so we're looking to model something after that. And some of these dollars, hopefully, that come forward on April 5th will assist us in terms of teaching our teachers how to identify it and to work with kids and families.
That's Dr. Kelvin Adams, Superintendent of Schools in the City of St. Louis. We have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back with Dr. Adams and with my colleague Dale Singer. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. With me in studio, Dr. Kelvin Adams, the Superintendent of Schools in the City of St. Louis, and my colleague Dale Singer of St. Louis Public Radio. He's the education reporter. Let's go right to the phones. We have a number of people who have been waiting to get at Dr. Adams, so let's bring in Ron, calling from St. Louis. Ron, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, my first comment is that there are no failing school districts where the masses of parents are involved, and I would like to know, what is in place to hold parents responsible for their kids' learning and development, and what techniques have been implemented to deal with children that are disrupting the classroom or have behavioral problems? And I'd like to be able to respond.
The first part of the question was, again, what?
Parents' responsibility, I think.
I have an adage, basically, that obviously we want parents to be involved, and we encourage parental involvement by putting together a PAC, which is a parent action committee with two parents from every school to get information about what's happening in the child's school. We have family community specialists in every one of our schools to be liaisons between parents and the school. But more importantly, we don't try to make any excuses for parents not being involved. We have to educate kids irrespective of what parents do, but we work really hard to try to communicate with parents and give them the information. The second part of the question was a question around
discipline.
We have five alternative program schools open, one at the middle school level, two at the high school level, one therapeutic school to deal with students who have behavioral issues outside of their ability to control those behaviors. And we also have a class that's for kids grades three, four, and five as well. So we have provided alternative environments when kids who are not on task in terms of behavior to support those students. We right now have an advisory committee looking at evaluating those programs and talking about how we could do a better job of addressing those kids. Right now we service about 632 kids in those six programs or six schools to try to address their behavior, but we don't really turn away any kid from a public education. We keep them in school regardless of what occurs, but we place them in alternative environments.
Well, yeah, that's great to hear that. Have you ever thought about separating boys and girls in those from each other in those alternative schools?
No, we are looking at some ideas right now. I would love to get your name and number to connect you with my lead person, Mr. Casey, to give us some feedback around that. We have done it in a junior high school or middle school, and it's been relatively successful for male gender-specific classrooms, but we have not done anything around schools.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. What is the dropout situation in the city and in the suspension situation?
The dropout situation fluctuates. The lowest I have seen in the last 2 years, about 12%, highest 18%. When we started, it was about 30-some percent for dropout. In terms of suspensions, we monitor that every single day. We reduced the number of suspensions over the last 4 or 5 years, but the number of African-American males still continues to be a challenge for us in terms of addressing and doing that. And so we're trying to – we have seven schools right now working on cultural competency with a professor from SLU to help us understand how to do a better job of recognizing issues with kids and not necessarily identifying kids as it relates to their gender and race. And so we need a lot more training around cultural sensitivity for all of our staffs, not just teachers, but security, principals, everybody. And so we are looking to put a component like that in place next school year.
We've been hearing a lot from here and other places about suspensions in elementary school.
Yes,
kids.
Yes. We have a committee meeting right now, and I would venture to say we're going to come back with a recommendation that we will not be suspending any kid in kindergarten, first, or second next school year. In addition to that, we will not be suspending kids for discipline as it relates to disrespect and because right now that's one of the biggest problems, because I look at a kid and the kid looks back at me and I say he was disrespectful, so I want to suspend him. And that's not disrespect. And so we have to do a better job identifying certain kinds of behaviors before we put kids out of school.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll bring Christopher into the discussion. He's calling from St. Louis. Christopher, thank you so much for waiting.
Yeah, hi. Dr. Adams, good to talk to you. I used to be a coordinator of your career technical education, and I know that you guys have some fantastic programs, but I really never hear any publicity about those programs. You've got an EMT program that your students get licensed as EMTs, and once they turn 18, they partner with the St. Louis Fire Department and with some of the local EMT programs, EMT companies out there. You've got an aviation program with a hangar full of aircraft that you've got students who are learning to work on them that get certified with their airframe and power plant programs. How are you guys looking at utilizing those?
Thank you very much for giving me the entry point to do that. You're right. We do have a number of career tech education programs. Gateway has approximately 18 health careers as well, with kids at Clyde C. Miller going away starting in January for internships, every single senior. So you're right, we do. We are continuing to partner. Right now we're partnering. We're looking to do a partnership with Lindenwood and also with St. Louis Community College with 20 kids in the sophomore year starting their next school year. We're screening 80 kids right now for that effort. So, yes, we do have a number of things going on in all of our schools around career tech education, cosmetology, horticulture, culinary. All of those kind of programs are in our high schools. Almost in every single high school there is a CTE component that all kids are taking advantage of. But you are correct. We have not done a really great job of putting that out there in the public arena to make them aware that our kids do have a great opportunity. As a matter of fact, on the agenda tomorrow night, there's an item that we will be sending some 20 students to Lynn Tech over the summer to walk away with a 3 to 6 college credits, and they'll be spending their summer for a 4 or 6 week program at Lynn Tech. So you're correct. We do have a number of things going on. We just have not done a great job in terms of advertising what we're doing with Rankin and the other ones.
While we're here, we have an email from Bob, who is supportive of your Proposition 1, by the way. But he asks for your views on high-performing selective schools such as Metro and McKinley.
I think those schools are already in the fabric of the city of St. Louis. The schools like Kennard and Mellencamp don't exist anywhere other than the city of St. Louis. Those schools that are exclusively 100% choice gifted schools. Metro is like number 18 in the entire country. So I think those schools are already in the fabric of the city of St. Louis. I think our task is to continue to support those schools, but also to create other avenues for kids and families who don't have an opportunity to go to schools that are highly rigorous and expect students to do well academically. And that's what we've tried to do. An article came out in the St. Louis Post that talked about neighborhood schools about 2 months ago, really talking about how positive changes have occurred in those neighborhood schools. So I think we're trying to do both, keep what's in place at Metro and Kennard and Mellencamp and McKinley, but also try to address the neighborhood schools as well.
You're not a proponent of early testing for gifted.
I'm a proponent of supporting kids as much as I can support them. I just think it's incredibly problematic to put so much weight on 3 and 4 year old kids in terms of identifying them for gifted. As a matter of fact, some of the researchers indicated that it's almost impossible, not impossible, but it's very difficult to identify a kid at 3 years and 4 years old as gifted. I would rather parents wait till later, but I understand that we do it because we are required to do so.
Right.
I know that you started your career as a teacher. Do you miss the classroom, or do you miss being a principal? Do you wish you had a job that put you more in contact directly with students?
Two things. When I retire from this job, I will go straight back to be a principal if somebody would hire me. That's number one. And I've toyed with the idea of trying to convince my board to go back and be a principal now and still remain to be superintendent. And I'm still toying with that idea today. So there's a couple of schools that I'm concerned about. And I think sometimes that, you know, the magic of the principalship is that you get an opportunity to change an environment, and you can actually see it happen. And so I really miss being a principal. I do.
There's your story for tomorrow.
Okay, thank you very much.
Let's take another call. We'll bring in Maury, calling from the city of St. Louis. Maury, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
No problem. I'd like to learn a little bit more about the St. Louis Foundation, where that money comes from, how, what part, what size, or what part of the budget it is, and how it affects the various programs in the school system.
Thank you very much. The St. Louis Foundation was started, I think, some 20 years ago with the Vashon Compact. And persons in the community, philanthropic partners like Enterprise and Wells Fargo, and a number donate dollars to the foundation. And the foundation provides unique opportunities for our kids, whether it's early childhood education in terms of iPads for kids, or assist us with a college and career readiness kinds of things. And so it's zero part of our budget. It doesn't make up any part of our budget. They provide those dollars that are targeted dollars to support programs that either we don't have enough resources to support. I'll give an example, one that's being supported right now. In every one of our high schools, we have a college specialist, someone who works with kids to help them make the transition from high school to college. Heretofore, before dollars were available, we did not have them in every single school. Today, I can tell you we have one in every single school. Thanks to our partners like Enterprise and the like, those dollars have come available to support us in that way. So it doesn't make up any part of the budget, but it supports programs that are targeted programs that we provide evaluation to those companies for those dollars.
That's terrific. My wife and I are tutoring in one of the city schools, and it seems like this year there's more extra programs like reading specialists and things like that. Is that money coming from your budget, or is that one of the places where the money from the foundation?
No, those dollars are coming from our Title I program. We realigned about $3 million to put tutors in our classes for reading and mathematics. And so, yes, those are title dollars that are focused strictly on students who are not reading on level. As Bill Haas said, reading is such an important piece.
Right.
We're going to look to transition more dollars next school year to expand it to other schools, because we see the success rate is really, really high.
Murray, that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We've just got about 2 minutes left. One question I wanted to ask you is why we as a country do so poorly in educating our kids. We rank 14th in educational attainment.
I think it's not a priority. I don't think education is a priority as it was 20 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. The whole notion that the district has not asked the taxpayers to support a tax in the last 25 years, I think part of it has to do with the confidence in the school district, but I think part of it is the fact that persons are not as committed to public education as they were before. And so I think that's one of the reasons. In those other countries that you talked about, it is a priority. Families make it a priority. Families are no longer looking at education as a way out of the situations that they're in. They see that there are other ways to try to do that, whether it's sports or artists in some way, shape, or form. And so I just don't think education is a priority as it should be in this country anymore.
It's interesting. I've got the list in front of me here. Some of those countries that are ahead of us include Finland, Ireland, Poland, Singapore, in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Not too surprising that in that part of the world they take it very, very seriously. But it's got to be disturbing to someone like yourself in the business to see us at that level.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary sometimes.
Is there a way to change that priority?
I think what we're doing is attempting to do that. I think, you know, this tax levy will say people do care about public education, and education is important, and we're willing to go in our pockets to support it. It's not just the money piece, but it's also the entire community focus around it. That's not dollars. So I don't think dollars solve the problem exclusively, but I think education has to be viewed as a priority for a community, and you see the results of the community thriving as a result of it.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Adams, thanks so much for being with us. We'll be in touch, I'm sure, in the weeks and months ahead. That's it for us today. Back tomorrow with a discussion of how changing time changes us. Dale Singer, thank you for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.